This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge.
I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill the bathtub full of sweat.
Sports fans, historic day here. Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Sports Lounge has been shuttered for the better part of a year. And boy, is it good to be back. You know, we redid everything. The stage is nice and shiny. The top shelf bottles are filled. The cigars are, you know, primo Cubans we brought in. It's like a new club. You know, everybody likes a new club. Good to be back, man. It's good to be back. I miss this place. I haven't said this in a while. Welcome to the Sports Lounge. I'm your host, the Cowboy, Roger Morrison. Joined in the lounge by two extreme regulars of the lounge. We're to the point that we're going to put them on staff and, you know, kind of run the place. First, my partner in crime, my father, Cowboy Senior. Welcome back.
Hey, great to be back in the lounge. You know, it looks better than ever. From my memory, I don't ever remember the cigar smoke being this thick. I don't ever remember the music sounding so good. And it's just a good feeling in the air being back in the lounge. It's been a long time. This is awesome.
I second that, Cowboy Senior. It's everything is a lot of good visuals here in the lounge, as per usual. And it's fantastic. It's been a long time. It's just been a long time, and it's good to be back. And my other regular, guy who's, you know, it's usually tough to get him on the microphone for the podcast when he's at the lounge, but he lives here. I mean, he's here all the time. He's been, you know, pissed off when we close the lounge. Text messages every day. When's the lounge opening? When's the lounge opening? But we're back, and he's decided to grace us with his presence on our little sports podcast here. The one, the only, Jay Arsenio D'Amato, John D'Amato. What's up, buddy?
Thanks, guys. I'm honored to be here for the grand reopening. Thanks for calling me a regular, too. I've usually been called an irregular all my life. And while I was waiting for you guys for the reopening, I was out there having a nice drink with a couple of your hostesses, Aura and Mystique. You might be familiar with them. And Jackie Moon was hanging out there, too. So we were having a good time, and it's great. I love the reopening here. And thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Absolutely, John. It's great to have you. And that's right. Everybody just heard Love Me Sexy. It's been a while since you heard Love Me Sexy. We're back, baby!
All right.
So, in all seriousness, we've done a little spring cleaning here at PTBN and decided it was time to bring the old back and make it new, as they say. So, Sports Evolution, we had a great time with Scott, great time with the doctor. Just, you know, all good things must come to an end. So the Sports Evolution's come to an end. And when I heard that was happening, I said, well, you know, we can't just not have a show. You know, we gotta have a show. And why not bring back the best sports show in the history of the Place to Be Nation? Why not bring it back? I mean, my phone is blown up since we closed the lounge. What are you doing? Bring the lounge back. And I said that was a chapter in the past. I've matured. I don't need to go to the lounge anymore. You know, I'm good. I'm a family man. But after a while, it kind of calls your name. You know, first it's a whisper. As time goes on, it becomes more of a dull roar. And what can I say, guys? I'm a lounge guy. That's it. Through and through, I'm a lounge guy, and I think you guys are too.
Yes, sirree.
Definitely. I mean, you know, the hardcore sports fans, they have to suffer with these clowns on ESPN like Skip Bayless and FS1, Colin Cowherd. These guys wouldn't know sports if they kicked them in the ass. So we need some real sports talk somewhere, so we got to come to the lounge for it.
It's a great point, John. By the same token, if either of those guys ever want to join us in the lounge, that's fine, too. You know, we'd be happy to debate back and forth. We feel we can hold our own with anyone here. So, on to the show. Pretty kind of a one-track story in the world of sports right now. So we're taping this Thursday night, about an hour and 20 minutes before tip-off of Game 6 of the NBA Finals. John and I have talked a little bit offline about the finals as they've been going on, and we had some predictions beforehand. I wrote a little column for the site where I predicted Cavs in 7. When they went down 3-1, going back to Golden State for Game 5, that did not look good. Now I'm back on the horse, baby. I think the Cavs are winning tonight. I think they're going into the O, and I think they're going to win Game 7 as well. It's LeBron's time. It's LeBron's time. I think it really has been an intriguing series. Kind of a weird series because the games have all, for the most part, outside of Game 4, have just not been really close. But it's just been intense basketball. And, the one thing, and we'll get you guys' thoughts, of course, but the thing that's striking to me about the series is both teams the ceiling and the floor is so far apart for both teams. Because, I mean, when they're clicking, both the Cavs and the Warriors, especially the Warriors, when they're clicking, I mean, they are world beaters. I mean, there's just, it looks like nobody can beat these guys. As opposed to, when they're not clicking, anybody can beat these guys. And I think Senior just stepped away for a minute, so we're going to try to get him back here. But Johnny, what have been your thoughts on the series so far?
Well, more than ever, you realize it's a make or miss league, and when the 3-pointers are being knocked down, the teams look like world beaters, like Golden State. But like in Game 5, Curry missed a boatload of open threes. And when that happens, they just look like a normal team. So it's a make or miss league. It's all about the open J's.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that was going to be another one of my points is don't be sorry. It's good we're on the same wavelength, my friend. I mean, for the record, John picked Golden State in 5.
In 5, yes.
If we were to not talk about the suspension, if the suspension didn't happen, that may be what would have happened. So this is a guy that knows his stuff.
Well, Cowboy, I'm not an I told you so guy. It really doesn't take any kind of balls to pick the team that won the great most amounts of games of all time. It doesn't really take much to pick them. But I thought it would be a short series, but I'm glad it's not, and I hope it goes 7.
Yeah, and you make a good point about the Warriors, and that's the thing, and I put it in the article, and I believe it. The thing that really strikes me about them is that, and I've watched a lot of them this season, but even more so in the playoffs with Curry really hasn't been, I don't know, he doesn't want to say he's injured. He's had some good games, but he doesn't quite look like the same guy. I don't know if it's injuries, fatigue, pressure, whatever. He hasn't really looked like himself in the playoffs, and because of that, their offense hasn't looked like it did during the regular season, where there was a lot of crisp ball movement. I mean, they're a ball movement-oriented offense and generating open looks. Well, what they've done in the playoffs, particularly against Oklahoma City and a couple of games in this series, is, I mean, and particularly Klay Thompson, is it's so tough to beat a team when you play perfect defense and they're just knocking down bad shots. And you saw some of that in Game 5 with Kyrie Irving. I mean, they're playing great defense on him. He's just knocking down bad shots. But the Warriors seem to be able to go on these runs where Thompson's shooting from 30 feet away, Curry's shooting step-back threes that nobody else in the league would even have the balls to take. And when those shots are going in, I mean, obviously you get the points, but it's going to be so disheartening for the other team to have to deal with that.
Yeah, especially like in Game 4, it seemed like Cleveland had the game pretty much in hand through 3 quarters, and Cleveland was always ahead, but Golden State would just bang out like 10 points in less than a minute. And the Warriors, the way they strike fast.
Yeah, and I think Senior went to the bathroom again. We keep on losing him here. Senior, are you with us?
Yes, I am. A little technical difficulty here, but it's all working out.
Oh, no problem, Senior. So we were just I don't know if you heard us, but we were discussing, you know, it's a make or miss league. The teams that are making, obviously, the team making their shots are winning. I brought up just the Warriors' ability to make bad shots and bad threes and how disheartening that is. And that's what fuels these runs that they go
on. You know what? I mean, in our eyes, they're bad shots. But I think if you watch Golden State all year, when they're on, there's no such thing as a bad shot. I mean, Klay makes shots where you swear he never even looked at the basket. The guy's just, both of them are the most amazing shooters you're ever going to see. And what we have viewed traditionally for all these years of watching basketball, the terminology you just used, bad shots, with those two guys, they're not bad shots. Because when they're on, they just knock them down one after another. It's an amazing thing to see. When they're on, they're impossible to defend. But in this series, they haven't been on all the time. I mean, you can play any kind of D you want. How do you stop those things? You can't. So I'll tell you, in the last game, Kyrie got into a little bit of a Klay Thompson zone almost, where there were times when some of the shots he was taking, I'm saying, oh, man, that's a bad shot, and it was going in. So that's kind of worked both ways, too.
Yeah, and I brought that up. So the thing that I had said, I don't know if you agree with this, Senior, is while you're in the restroom, is I watched Golden State all season, and it's very much been a ball movement-oriented kind of offense where they get a lot of good shots, a lot of wide-open threes. And Curry doesn't really look like himself to me. Not just based on the last game, just kind of based on since he went down in the cup and came back. He's had some big games and he's looked very, very good, but he hasn't looked quite like himself to me. And I think that's holding them back a little bit and creating these situations where they have to shoot these bad shots. And I'm going to call them bad shots. I mean, they're not designing the offense for Curry to be taking step back 27 footers. That's not what they want to do. And you start, and when you're taking shots like that, I mean, you have to be on because you're not getting a lot of easy baskets, right? And so when they're off, you see kind of like what happened in game 3 and what happened in game 5, which is they can't hit the broadside of a barn. And I think it's a real, especially, I think that Golden State to me has to close it out tonight. And I know that sounds ridiculous with it going back to Oracle in game 7, but, you know, I know we look at analytics and things like that and momentum doesn't mean much, but losing two closeout games in a row, a team that only lost twice in a row once all season, which was in the last series, a guy like LeBron, I mean, if LeBron is making his jump shot like he was in Game 5, I mean, he's the most unguardable guy in the league. I don't care. It's Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, anybody. You can't guard that freight train. You have to lay off him. And if he's making those, he's unguardable. And if he goes into Game 7 with that kind of confidence, he's one of the few guys in the league who can go in there and win that game by himself. And I think with the Cleveland thing, with every just the whole LeBron story, I think he goes in there and wins that game 7. With that said, I think tonight's game is a Herculean task for the Cavs get your guys' thoughts on this. Every game I watch, whenever the Cavs are ahead, like even in the last game, whenever the Cavs are ahead, I feel like Golden State's playing terrible and the Cavs should be ahead by more. And it's just one or two of these little runs. And when Golden State gets up by double digits, the game's over. And it's a weird feeling with this series. What are your thoughts there, John?
Well, I don't think it's so ridiculous, like you say, for to think that Cleveland could win a Game 7. The Warriors look vulnerable at home. They lost one in the OKC series at home. And they easily could have lost Game 1 of this, where Curry and Thompson didn't even show up. They had to. They need a Herculean efforts from guys like Barbosa and Livingston off the bench just to get game one. And in game 5, they didn't come through. So it's not ridiculous at all to think that they'll lose a game 7 on home court. And especially Curry. I personally still think they're going to close it out tonight, because I think Curry's plays better on the road lately. Because it seems like at home, he's become this iconic figure, and he's got a signal to the crowd after every play, and he's too concerned. with his hand motions to the crowd and, you know, with the mouthpiece and all these shenanigans. So I think he's going to be a little more focused tonight. And I think they're going to close it out. But it's definitely, you know, not a ridiculous, like you said, for Cleveland to come back and take it in Game 7, because the Warriors are definitely vulnerable at this time.
Another interesting thing in going into tonight's game, Golden State's defense with Draymond should be better tonight. Right? LeBron shouldn't be getting into the paint as easily as he did in the last game, which helped open things up for Kyrie, and, I mean, he was unbelievable. But how much do you think Golden State is going to miss their rim protector, Bogut? I mean, that could be a factor in this game. Cleveland could score more in the paint. I know he's not a sexy guy who gets a lot of points or anything, but he is a major defensive presence in the middle of that defense, and I think he could be missed tonight.
It's really only – he only logs about 10, 15 minutes. It's really who finishes senior. I don't think Bogut's absence is going to be that much, because basically they're going to play their so-called lineup of death with Barnes, Green, Thompson, Curry, and Iguodala most of the game. So we're only talking about that. They got to fill that 10 minutes, and Azili and Vadija will pick up the slack there. So I don't think Bogut's going to be much of a factor, that loss.
So I don't think it's a huge factor. He has been starting games well for them, getting some block shots early in some games, and he is a defensive presence. But like to D'Amato's point, he doesn't log the kind of minutes that it's going to be a huge impact. Draymond's defense. I mean, I think they would have won the last game if Draymond played, because it wasn't a game where Golden State played bad. I mean, Klay Thompson had like one of those games where he went on that run in the second quarter where if they had Draymond, I mean, that first half of Game 5 is one of the best halves of basketball I've ever watched in my life. And, I mean, Thompson was just unconscious, where usually that's when they're sticking the nail in the coffin. But they couldn't stop Cleveland, and particularly LeBron. And so it was basket for basket and basket for basket. And, you know, you're watching the game, and it basically comes down to who's going to start missing shots first. And it was Golden State. With Green, with Draymond, if Curry or Thompson has one of those crazy games that they're very capable of, it's really, really hard for Cleveland to win.
I think that was kind of hard to explain in that last game, too, as well as Klay shot the ball in the second quarter, as well as he played. I think he only took, he only got three or four shots in the fourth, and he actually sat out a pretty decent amount in the fourth quarter, and I found that that was a tough thing to wrap your head around, what was going on there. I'd like to say it was Cleveland's defense that kind of shut him down, but it kind of didn't look that way. I don't know. It was pretty odd that they didn't make a conscious effort to get Klay more shots in the fourth quarter.
I still think that even if Green played, Cleveland would have took Game 5, because that was a monumental effort by LeBron and Kyrie Irving. I mean, first time in history where two guys dropped over 40. That was just a Herculean effort. And, you know, not to rub it in, guys, but I'm sure that reminded you of 2012 Game 6 versus the Celtics, the LeBron's type game where he wasn't going down no matter what.
No, I mean, very, very much so. Very, very much so. And, I mean, I think you could see the same type of thing from him tonight. The crazy thing about Golden State's so good that wouldn't have been good enough. that Irving had to also have the game of his life.
Yeah, that's why I don't see them duplicating that two more times.
Right, and I mean, you got to think. What do you? Like, we got to talk about Kevin Love a little bit.
Oh, wow!
Really, really good Fredo. Player.
Fredo.
Really good player, but just I mean, he's so much in that. I mean, he's in the Chris Bosh role, right? From Miami, it's the same thing. And it seems like, I mean, I don't know if it's a confidence thing or they're just not trying to get him the ball, but he's really a net negative. I mean, just, and it's crazy to say because he's probably one of the top 20 players in the league, but he's really a net negative for them when he's out there because of his lack of defense right now. And he's not scoring and he's not rebounding. That old man, Richard Jefferson, is actually a better fit for this series than Kevin Love is. Thoughts?
Yeah,
it's hard to understand because I think he's a way better player than that. You know, people that are just watching this series, and you're hearing it everywhere that he's miscast with this team. It doesn't work. Well, there were a lot of games that it did work. I mean, he's played some very good games for the Cavs. I know they kind of use him more as a spot up shooter, and they don't run the offense through him like Minnesota did. But I mean, he's never disappeared like this. This is inexplicable. I mean, obviously everybody thinks now that they're going to move him after this season. Well, they're not going to get as much now, really. It's been so bad that his stock has to be going down somewhat. It's really hard to explain because I think he's a very, very good player, very versatile, can play inside, outside, can pass. I mean, offensively, he has all the skills you could possibly want. And to say he's played bad defense, okay, well, he's always had a rep for that, but for him to completely disappear offensively, almost look lost out there, I honestly don't understand it.
I think it's just a matter of him being a very good regular season player and a stat compiler, which is a big difference than being a very good playoff performer. And Cowboy, you mentioned how Chris Bosh, in the Chris Bosh role. Well, Chris Bosh was a star with Toronto, and he came in and he changed his game around to be more of a spot up shooter, and he was okay with not even taking a shot for the offense, going two quarters without even taking a shot, and just posting up and being more of a 3-point shooter and doing the dirty work or whatever was needed to win, and Love just hasn't been able to do that. So I see him as more of a stat compiler and a very good regular season player, but not so much in the playoffs. And again, Cowboy, you hit it right on the head. They're so much better with Richard Jefferson, with the fork stuck in him in there. So much better on defense, and he's a team guy. And Richard Jefferson's gritty. He's going for that one last piece of gold. A desperate, aging veteran. And they're so much better with him in the lineup. You could see it.
And the thing, great points, John. And the thing that really surprises me about Love. I get, especially in a game where LeBron and Kyrie are both cooking like that, I get where he's not going to get a lot of shots. And I mean, he shouldn't get a lot of shots, right? Nobody should. When those guys are cooking like that, just get out of the way. But it's the rebounding. The guy averaged like 15 rebounds a game in Minnesota, and he's getting beat to the boards consistently by like Curry. I saw Curry out-rebound him a few times. And with that, with Golden State, with no Bogut, again, to your point, John, they're going to have to play the death lineup a lot. They in the regular season and in the playoffs, Kerr kind of likes to keep that lineup in his back pocket more than give it real extended run. Well, I think he's pretty much backed into a corner now where they don't want game seven. That lineup is going to get a lot of minutes. And the way that you can attack that lineup is with your bigs. And you would think, I mean, Kevin Love is going to have like Harrison Barnes on him. He's going to have a guy that you would think you can just get it down to him in the block and he can do some work. Or at the very least, he can own the glass. Like when the death lineup's in there, my thought, if I'm Ty Lue, is maybe I don't need Tristan Thompson. With I can play my own version of the death lineup with Kevin Love as the best rebounder on the floor, but he's just looked so bad that it makes it tough to do that.
I'm not sure about that. I mean Thompson is key, but he does all the dirty work. He gets just about every loose ball, rebound, the picks. I think for them to win, they need Thompson in there as many minutes as possible.
It's just and they're going to play him as much as possible. I'm just saying, in theory, you would think that Love could be that guy doing the dirty work, right? And then you can surround LeBron with literally four 3-point shooters, which is when they're offensively at their best. But Thompson's been great, and I mean, I've been really impressed with Thompson's defensive ability. He's switching on Curry, switching on Thompson and Klay Thompson, and very much holding his own. He's a big key to this game. So, what are your keys to the game tonight? In an hour, what does Cleveland have to do to? I think we kind of covered. For me, at least, I think it's obvious. If Golden State's path to victory is easier. They need a couple of those runs. right? They get a couple of those runs, and the game's probably over. What does Cleveland need to do to stop that and win the game?
Well, somewhat, I think. You got to hope that they're not totally on. You know, I mean, some of it is out of Cleveland's hands, I think. You know, I think if Golden State is in the zone and gets on those runs and makes those unconscious shots, it's really hard to not do much about it, except unless LeBron and Kyrie can go nuts and match baskets with them, and that's really hard to do. So, in all honesty, I think the keys to the game lie in Golden State's hands. I think if they're on, they don't lose. If they're not on, Cleveland has a shot.
So you're not making any, I mean, from a strategy standpoint, you think both teams should just kind of go with what they've been doing? And
I don't think you do anything different now. You've come this far with it. Yeah, I mean, you guys were talking about Tristan Thompson. And, yeah, if Cleveland wins, he's a guy that's going to probably have a good game. And you know what? When you don't even think about Tristan Thompson through his career in the regular season, but he's one of those guys that you notice in the playoffs. You know, he's a guy that can come up big and have a 20, 25 rebound game or do something ridiculous like that and get 17, 18 garbage points. If he has a game like that, that could be a key to them winning. To think that maybe Love is going to step up, I don't know. It would be from out of the blue right now. He's looked so lost. He looks like he's just completely disconnected. So I don't even think they play him a whole ton of minutes. But I still think it's really about Golden State. That Golden State's on. I don't think no matter what Cleveland does, they can't beat them if they're on. If they're really on, they can't beat them. And it's going to be interesting to watch how Draymond comes out, you know, how he reacts to this with all the comments that he's made about how awful he feels that he let his team and the city down, and he's gone on and on. Is he going to be like a little too fired up and maybe get himself in foul trouble early in the game? That could be an interesting thing to watch, because I think he is a key, especially to their defense and their offense, really. Their offense runs a lot better when he's in the game, too. So he's going to be I'm going to be watching him closely at the beginning of the game tonight to see if that's a factor, that he comes out just a little too keyed up, or if he can just relax and play his game, do what he does. And obviously, I don't see him doing anything stupid. He's talked enough about that he has to have self-control, so they're not going to be able to bait him into anything crazy. So those are some things to watch, I think. That's a big thing to watch. Draymond at the beginning of the game, and, you know, like a lot of basketball games, when you got two really good offensive teams, which team is shooting the ball better? Who's knocking down the shots? There's a strong possibility that that's Golden State, and if they're really knocking down their shots, then you're not going to beat them.
All right, so I have some thoughts. So Draymond, if history's any indicator, like the last series when he obviously had kicked Steven Adams in the nuts, and in the next game it was in Oklahoma State, and he came out like a pussycat. He had his, you know, one of his worst games of the season. He was a complete non-factor. So he needs to, you know, he seems like a guy who plays on emotion, but that kind of could work against him in some ways too. And not so much that he's too fired up, but that he's, you know, he needs to be too fired up. If he's not full throttle, then he's not effective. So there's a real balance for him there. And you know, strategically, and I'll kick it to John after this, but strategically, what I think the adjustment that Kerr is going to make is, I think they're still, you know, I think they're going to give LeBron jump shots. You have to. And if he's making them, he's making them. I think the big adjustment's going to be on Irving. I think they're going to work to get keep the ball out of his hands, double team trap. A lot of what Cleveland's been doing to Curry, which is, you know, just get the ball out of his hands. I think you'll see Clay pretty much on Irving the whole game. So if I'm Cleveland, Kerr's a very good coach, so I think this is coming. This is a huge game for two guys for me, J.R. Smith and Love. One of those two guys has to step up in a big way. J.R. Smith's going to have Curry on him, who he can definitely do work against. And J.R.'s been looking a lot better. Instead of just shooting spot-up threes, going to the rack, and Curry's a guy you can go to the rack on, and then Love. It would be so huge for them if Love could come out, knock down a couple of shots, play his game, give them some an offensive presence on the inside that's not LeBron, and work for them. But I think for Cleveland to win in the game, I think LeBron's going to have another triple-double, 30-10-10 kind of deal. One of those other two guys has to step up. What are your thoughts there, John?
Well, as a Knicks fan watching J.R. Smith, if you're relying on him for anything, that's a wing and a prayer. I mean, you could tell in the first few minutes if he hits a couple of threes early, then there's a chance that he may not that he may be useful for the rest of the game. But if he misses those first couple, then he's going to check out and most likely later on, you know, do some stupid fouls, and it'll just be a lot of turnovers and a big mess. But I mean, listen, guys, with LeBron and Kyrie could have you, me, and Senior as the 3, 4, and 5, and still win the East and just about beat anybody. I mean, LeBron's one of the greatest players of all time. So as long as you got him on your side, there's always a chance. And I agree with you totally about how Green, but I, you know, came out like a pussy versus OKC. But I think he learned his lesson this time, and he's going to come out a little more controlled, and he's going to be a big force. Because last game, LeBron only had to deal with Iguodala guarding him. So now he's going to get 20 minutes of Iggy on him and 20 minutes of Draymond on him. Definitely it's going to tighten up on their defense definitely a lot.
And what do you think about do you think Kerr is going to try to force Kyrie to give up the ball and make somebody else beat them? It makes sense to me.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, Golden State's got a. I mean, Curry's limited defensively, and like I said, so is Harrison Barnes. So there's only so much they could do. I mean, Iggy and Green are great defenders, and Klay Thompson's an average defender. You know, which he doesn't get noticed for because he's such a great scorer. But otherwise, you know, they're kind of limited. So they have to make do with what they got.
All right, boys, so prediction time, and just so you're aware, this podcast will not be posted until after the game, I pinky swear that we're taping this before the game. We'll start with Steve here. Who takes game 6, and if necessary, game 7, and why?
Okay, I think it ends tonight. I just think they're too good. And they're going to come out with fire in their eyes. Draymond coming back, they can get off to a good start, which I see them doing. I think they do what they do. I think they just shoot the Cavaliers out of the game. As good as the Cavaliers can play offensively, I don't think they can keep up. I think this is going to be a real focused effort tonight from Golden State. They're going to move the ball. They're going to knock down shots. They're going to play better defensively, obviously, with Draymond in there, and offensively. And it's just going to be too much for LeBron and Kyrie to overcome. So that's the way I see it. It ends tonight on a great offensive performance. One of the greatest offensive teams in the history of basketball, the greatest three-point shooting team you'll ever see, comes out and does their thing tonight. And when they do their thing, you can't beat them.
Who's your series MVP?
Klay Thompson.
All right. D'Amato.
I think we're going to get our first nail biter of the series, where it's going to come down to the last minute, and the Warriors are going to pull it out by 1 or 2 points. And Draymond Green is going to get his retribution. He's going to come out calm and come up with a triple-double tonight, and he's going to be your MVP.
All right. I think to this point, Draymond would be the MVP. So if he has a good game, probably seals it, unless they don't want to give it to him because of all the, below the
bench. The shenanigans. I mean, it's a shame because going into this year, I was a big fan of his. But I think a lot of the stuff went to his head. First All-Star game, the Warriors being on national TV, they get all this. I think, unfortunately, a lot of it got to his head, and he gets, too caught up with the shenanigans. And, so I'm really falling off. You really can't be a fan of a guy that, every time he gets into a confrontation, he goes for the other guy's yam bag. That's his first instinct. That's not somebody that, you want to root for, but hopefully he'll get it together tonight.
Yeah. we leave that more for the girls at the lounge than on the court.
Oh, yeah, speaking of that, Aura and Mystique, they're calling us. So.
All right. I won't keep you too much longer, John. Just give me another 20 minutes or so, all right? You keep it in your pants for 20 minutes?
I make them wait. So somebody said you gotta keep them, you gotta make them wait. You gotta wait them out.
All right, so for myself, I'm gonna be the contrarian here.
Of course.
In Cleveland, I feel so bad for the people of Cleveland. I can't, it's like, you know, if you're a Cleveland fan, wouldn't you have rather just have them lost game five in the Oracle? Versus coming back to lose game six at home. And it would be the most Cleveland thing in the world for them to just get wasted at home tonight. I just don't think it's happening. I think LeBron puts the team on his back, has another one of those transcendent games. If Golden State wins, I think it's going to be based on Irving trying to force things too much, based on what he did in the last game, because there's a real, he's walking a tightrope where he can look spectacular one second and then completely out of control the next. And if he lets the last game get to his head and really starts to force stuff when it's not working, I could see where the Cavs have one of those 5 or 6 minute stretches where they don't score, which will just kill them. But
like in game four, yeah.
Correct. Yes. I hope that doesn't happen. I think LeBron puts the team on his back. I think he's going to knock down his jump shots. And I think you're going to get 35 or more combined from Love and J.R. Smith.
Wow.
To carry the Cavs to victory at home. I'm with you, John. I think it's going to be a very close game. And in a close game, you go with the team that has the best player on the court. And I don't care who the unanimous MVP is. If I can have one guy, that one guy is LeBron James. He's the best player in the league.
I agree with that.
I don't think it's close. I think it's I think it's a joke. And I think Curry's great, but I think it's a joke that he would be a unanimous MVP and LeBron never has. It doesn't make sense. It's like those years that Jordan didn't win it. You know, it's like you want to give it to somebody else. But the
Carl Malone. Yeah.
I mean, Curry's surrounded by some good players. I mean, you look at what LeBron's done with nothing. I mean, not this year. They have a good team. But he's taken them to the finals before with nothing. With absolutely, with literally, like, you know, me, you, and Senior.
The team. Booby Gibson, yeah, Booby Gibson.
Curry, I don't think would. I mean, it's tough for a point guard to be on that level and affect the game in such a way, you know.
Plus the defense is not even, it's not even close. That's why when people get, you know, too caught up in a Curry, you know, the defense, LeBron's defense over Curry, it's not even close as far as his all-around game.
Right. And he's a better passer than Curry, too.
Yep.
You know, I mean, Curry's an amazing, amazing offensive player. Best handle in the league. Best shooter I've ever seen. But I think he needs the guys around him. And I mean, any point guard, Isaiah Thomas, all the great point guards. You know, you can't do it alone. Even Magic, right? Couldn't do it by himself. But I think LeBron carries them to victory. Close victory. 6 points. The people of Cleveland, at the very least, they don't lose on their home court tonight. And then I gave you my thoughts on Game 7. Cleveland coming in, riding high, two-game winning streak. The Warriors, a little bit of doubt creeping in. They just lost there. And to your point, John, they haven't been great at home, and I said Cleveland in seven, which meant that I thought they could go into Oracle and win game seven, and nothing in the series has changed my mind about that. So Cleveland in seven, finals MVP, Kyrie Irving. Game tonight, transcendent game seven. And they would and they're robbing LeBron when they do that by giving it to the point guard, but that's what they do.
There's no way if Cleveland does win, there's no way LeBron doesn't get it. But it's good to make a bold choice. Though.
It would be Irving right now, right? I mean, he's averaging what, 32 points a game or something in the series.
Hey John, you call that a bold choice? I think the combined 35 from Love and JR tonight is pretty bold.
Yes.
I hope they're not relying on that.
I want the text messages when it happens. That's all I'm saying. Just credit where it's due. You gotta go out on a limb in life.
But here's one: if it does go seven and Golden State does win it in seven, I think LeBron might get the MVP in a losing cause.
It's so tough. I mean, it's, you know, they were saying that last year. If he ever deserved it, it was last year. I mean, the last year that was him with nothing, absolutely nothing, and he took him to six. All right, guys, so moving on, we got about 20 minutes left here before we lose D'Amato to the VIP room. Coming up June 23rd, we have the NBA draft. So all basketball all the time here on the lounge this week. And a lot of crazy, you know, it's a real interesting draft. You know, you've seen some movement with some guys. You know, particularly Marquese Chriss seems to be up in everybody's top four now. So I guess we'll start it off. I'll ask senior, how do you think the first two are going to go? Because there's the two and then the rest. Do you think it's going to go true to form, Simmons, Ingram? You think Ingram might go one? You think there might be a curveball? And then do you agree with the pick?
Yeah. But we've been hearing, you know, you're hearing so many different things. But from the latest stuff we've been hearing, and who knows to believe it, it seems as though it's going to be Simmons first. And Ingram will definitely go too. It's kind of hard to argue with. You know, I would think that Simmons probably has a bigger upside. I know there's the whole thing about, well, you know, he's got to become a better shooter. But guys have been. I think he has the most tools, biggest upside in the draft, and also obviously, he's a guy that you're going to be able to plug in and play right away, and he's going to help your team right away. I really like Ingram as a swing man, big two guard, already has the shooting skills. If asking me if I agree with the pick, I would have trouble not taking Ingram looking at this draft if I was picking number one. So maybe I'm going to say I disagree with it. When you combine the fact that we're already questioning Simmons' attitude, the way he seemed to check out on LSU at the end of the season. You look at that, I think there's way more risk. Simmons is more upside, but more risk. Ingram is, at the very least, going to be a very, very good NBA two-guard, three-type swing man that can knock down the threes that, I mean, seeing him live as we did at the dunk in the NCAA tournament, Cowboy, he's got that nice, smooth, everything looks, he makes everything look kind of effortless. He's got nice long arms. He can play defense. He's a well-rounded player. So I think Ingram's more the sure bet. Simmons more the upside. They're both going to go, they're definitely going to go 1-2, and I think Simmons is going to go one. If I had the one, especially with the way life has gone for Philly for quite the pit they've been in for a while, I would be taking Ingram, but I think they're going to take Simmons. And then we'll end the question there because we can talk about all the possible trades after things that Philly have said, like they really like our guy Chris Dunn. So could they make a deal, trade an Okafor to Boston, then say get the three pick and a good player from Boston for that, like a Jay Crowder type, and then take Simmons and Chris Dunn at 1 and 3, and you know, be rid of a real asset in Okafor, but another guy who had some behavioral issues in his first year, so that's another possibility too. But I think regardless, Simmons goes one, Ingram goes two, no matter what happens.
Yeah, what do you think there, Johnny?
Yeah, Simmons has been preparing for the NBA since the middle of the college season last year, and so based on hype, he's going to go number one and Ingram too. But I feel in the future that Ingram's going to have a better pro career.
I mean, the comparison for Ingram is Durant, right? I mean, he really kind of looks like him out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one thing with Durant is, I mean, I think he averaged, what, 22 and 12 or something for his one season at Texas, and Ingram didn't do that at Duke, but Duke's a much better team. You put Ingram on a garbage team like LSU, for example, but maybe he does what Durant did, and, you know, we're not having this conversation because he's clearly the number one guy. I'm in the same camp as you guys. If I were the Sixers, I would just take Ingram. I think the Simmons wants to play in LA, right? I mean, he wants to play in LA. So you have a kid who's already has some questionable character issues, but like effort issues, and like looks like he doesn't give a shit. And if to start him off in a situation maybe he doesn't even want to be in, is, I don't know, you know? I think you bring Ingram in, he's ecstatic, he's the number one pick. He's probably a better fit for their team, too. But, like you said, I think Simmons is upside. You know, he's got that, you don't want to say, like, he reminds you of LeBron a little bit, right? With his, you know, that big body, but the skills that he has. So that kind of upside, it is tough not to take him number one. I would personally take Ingram, too. So I think we're all in agreement there, which is unusual. The Celtics at 3. Senior, what do you think the percentage chance is that this pick is moving?
I think they really want to. I think that that's their choice. The situation the Celtics are in now, if you look at their team, they want to bring in what they don't have. I mean, obviously, the best player, they were a fun team this year. More than fun, they were a joy to watch. As a basketball fan, I loved watching the Celtics this year because of their effort and what they got out of that team and how everybody bought into what Brad was selling. But they don't have a marquee player, let's face it. The best player on the team is a little Isaiah Thomas. He's a real good player. But, you know, what they would like to do is trade that pick and bring in an established guy that's basically better than anyone they have. The name that you're hearing more than any is Jimmy Butler. And if they can work something out with Chicago where they give them the 3 and honestly a player or two and maybe even throw in that 16 pick, I think they would do it. Chicago's listening to offers for Butler. You hear things like him and Rose have issues. Obviously, you can't deal Rose because of his value just isn't there with the contract he's carrying to go along with all the injuries he's had. So the other scenario is you deal Butler, who is an asset who will really bring you something, and you make the most of it. So you look at all that and it makes sense. But the Celtics aren't the only ones talking to him about Butler, but I think they have the most to offer. So if Chicago really is serious about moving him, there would be no surprise. I'm going to say there's a 65% chance that they move the pick. The other guy you could see is, and we've been talking about him tonight, Kevin Love. I think that would be plan B or C, and Butler would definitely be option A. And they do, like I said, they do have a lot to give. The 3 pick has value. There's no doubt about it. And they've got guys on their team. You know, we may mention a guy like Crowder, even Sully, Olynyk, whatever. If you throw a couple of Marcus Smart, if you throw 2 of those pieces, that number 3 pick, and then they've got so many picks, you want to take another one of their picks, go right ahead. To get a guy like Jimmy Butler, if I'm the Celtics, I do it. And it would make sense for Chicago, too. So if I had to predict what's going to happen, most likely, I think that deal happens. I think maybe that's wishful thinking for me as a Celtic fan, but they give a lot and they end up, including the 3 pick, and they end up with Jimmy Butler. I think that's the most likely scenario.
I think Tibbs really wants Butler. I
mean, Minnesota, yes.
Everything
Minnesota.
You're reading, so the price is going to be high. So let me run this by. See, John, I'll get to you in a sec, buddy. This is senior. We're talking.
No, that's okay.
Senior,
that's okay. You stole my thunder because I think he's going to Minnesota because Tibbs is going to make a hard play.
So they're going to make a hard play. So I think what it'll take to get Jimmy Butler in Boston at the very least is the 3, the 16, and Avery Bradley. Do you do first team all defense, young kid.
Yeah, and I would still do it in a heartbeat. You know, the Celtics, they need a marquee. They need somebody who's better than what they have. I mean, if they made that trade, don't you think that they're a better team when that trade's done with what Brad does with all the other pieces? As good as Avery is, Marcus is an awful good defensive guard. They have a good defensive team to begin with.
Jimmy Butler's an awful good defensive guard.
Jimmy Butler's a good, yeah. So if you say that would get it done, if I'm Danny, I do it. And Danny's really aggressive. I think Danny would do that.
I agree that I would do it too. It's a steep, steep price, but at the end of the day, in a bidding war, they can give more than Minnesota. I've read that Chicago wants Wiggins. John, do you do that if you're Minnesota? Wiggins and the number 5 pick for Jimmy Butler.
Yes, I would do it if I was them, sure.
Man, that's tough. That's a tough one.
Yeah, that's Avery Bradley's one thing and Wiggins is another, you know. Sky's the limit on where Wiggins is going. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. And he is loaded with talent, so that would be... I mean, if they're willing to give the 5 and Wiggins, I don't know if the Celtics could do anything about that. That might be an offer that the Celtics can't top.
Right. You'd have to do Bradley and Smart, and that's tough. I mean, at one point or another, it becomes diminishing returns.
Right.
If they keep the pick, I think they'll take Jamal Murray. I love Dunn, obviously, as a PC fan, and I think he's going to be a great player. But I think he's – if they're not – unless there's other moves, I think he kind of replicates a lot of what they already have in some other guys. Like, you know, Smart is a similar kind of player. Terry Rozier is just like a not-quite-as-good version of Chris Dunn. Murray gives them something they could really use in a dead-eye, knockdown shooter, scorer, who could develop into that, you know, that go-to kind of guy in crunch time.
What about, I mean, you have to at least discuss Dragan Bender, because that's possible. It's possible that they see him not as the guy that's going, obviously, at 18 years old, with limited experience internationally, not a guy that's going to plug in and help you right away. But maybe, and I mean, they went and looked at him, and I'm not going to tell you I've seen the guy play a lot and I know a lot, but I'm going to tell you that maybe they're looking at Dragan Bender as the guy that has the biggest upside in the entire draft. A guy that's 7'1", that's obviously going to develop to what more than what he is now at 18 years old, but 7'1", that has has the ball handling skills of a point guard and the passing ability of a point guard and can knock down shots. And think about that, 7'1" with all of those skills. He's only 18 now, so some of it's a mystery, but they went and looked at him and they evaluated. And if they take the leap of seeing him as saying there's a strong possibility that this guy becomes a superstar, that this is the player in this draft, there's nobody else with that kind of size. I mean, this is a freak. This is like Kevin Durant, right? 7 feet plus with all kinds of skills. If that's who this guy's going to become, well, he may not help you right away. But if you really believe that's who he's going to become, I think you kind of have to draft him. So these are things we don't know. How highly is that what they believe Dragan Bender is? And are they willing? Are they willing to take that risk at 3? I agree. It would be easier to take that risk if you're picking at 7 or 8 and he falls to you. Okay. And you're saying at 3, you kind of, you know, and as especially, they can't think like fans, but as fans, we want them to take somebody that's going to help right away. We don't have that kind of patience. But as a GM, I think Danny knows that no matter what he does in this draft, we're not winning the championship next year, realistically. We're not winning the championship in 2 years. It's 3 or 4 years away. And if this kid's going to develop into something that special, then I think you draft him.
Man. So, I mean, I would take a little issue with the not winning the championship next year. I mean, I think Ainge is looking to hit a home run.
Yeah, the East is wide open, though.
Like he did with, you know, in the KG.
Man, I didn't say win the East. I said win the championship. I mean, that's kind of pie in the sky to say that we can build a championship team this offseason. I mean, I'm a huge Celtic fan, and that's not what I'm expecting. You know, I'd like to take a step forward, but you would need to get a lot more than Jimmy Butler to add to this team. Are you watching these teams playing in the finals? I mean, the Celtics are a long way from being that kind of a team. I love them. I'm the most optimistic home fan in the world. I mean, I'd go to war for my team. You know what I mean? I love those guys. But they're quite a bit away from being a championship team. Maybe not that far away from winning the East, depending on what happens with Cleveland. Cleveland could break up. If they lose big tonight, who knows what's going to happen to them. But winning the East and winning a championship are two different things.
KD, baby.
Yeah, okay. That'd be a start, that's for sure.
And I think, you know, the Bender, your guy there in New York, John, Porzingis, probably did more for Bender's draft stock than anybody with what went down there. I mean, the everybody hated the pick, and then, oh, man, this guy can really play.
Yeah, well, you know, those guys, though, are hit or miss, though. So, you know, Porzingis was a rare hit, but you know, those foreign guys, you never know. A lot of those guys come and do El Busto.
To me, it's tough to draft a guy who, I mean, he only played to like 12 or 13 minutes a game for his team in Europe. And I think he averaged 7 points a game. It just screams with Darko or Nicholas Skidisvili.
Frederick Weiss. Yes.
They say there's a reason for that. That coaches over there are coaching for their lives, that they fire coaches like nothing over there in Europe. And so they're playing the veterans. They're not trying to develop talent. They're all about winning. I mean, this kid's only 18 years old now. So it's not like he was on a D-League team or something where if you got a couple of older guys who are better than him, you'd play him anyway to develop them. These guys are coaching for their jobs. That's why he didn't play a lot of minutes there. It's because he's so young, and they're coaching for their jobs. And remember, it's historic. Teams draft upside. If the Celtics don't take him, this kid's going in the top five. There's no doubt about it. And it's because of there's dreams of what I said. You can't coach 7'1". You can't coach 7'1" with ball handling and passing skills. This kid, he's intriguing a lot of people. There's a possibility that he's going to be very, very special. And you can't deny that that's a possibility. And that is going to entice somebody to take him very high.
I personally think the Celtics are in, if it's not win the championship mode, they're in win now mode, right? They don't want to take a step back. And I don't see them making that pick. Unless it's for somebody else. You never know. You never know, of course. So at four, the Suns don't need a point guard. And if things go the way Senior thinks, where Bender goes three, Dunn and Murray will be on the board at four. I don't think the Suns will take either of them with Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe in town. I think Marquise Chris or Bender makes a lot of sense for them. I mean, they're pretty much in a rebuild. Both those guys are big upside guys, as you said, Senior. Five's where I think Dunn will go. Minnesota. I think Rubio is probably going to be on his way out. It's a real nice situation. They have, you know, as we've talked, if they don't get, you know, even if they get Butler, I think that makes it make even more sense. But even without Butler, they have, you know, they have Wiggins, they have Towns, they have scorers, and they could, you know, Rubio is kind of a hot and cold point guard and can't shoot. I mean, Dunn isn't a great shooter, but Rubio can't shoot his way out of the paper bag. I think he would be a good fit there. What do you think, Johnny, for the Wolves? You like that point guard there as a fit?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I'm not a fan of Rubio. They need to upgrade that. He's fragile, and like I said, you know, you need to score and dish. And, you know, Rubio can only dish, so definitely that would be a good spot for Dunn. But I think Thibodeau is going to go all out to get Jimmy Buckets because they kind of have that coach player relationship way. He gets the best out of him, and you know, he turned him into an all-star. So I think he's gonna do what he can to get Jimmy Butler to Minnesota.
All right, and then so only a few minutes left here. Each of you, give me a. What do you guys think of Buddy Hield? One, do you think he's going to be a good pro? Two, do you think he goes to the Pelicans at six? I've seen a lot of Sacramento at eight. What do you think?
He's gonna go high. How high? Who knows? I think he's gonna be a good pro. The things that work against him. One of the things that works against him is, you know, why did he stick around till his senior year? And he really improved a lot his last year. But I mean, the guy's a proven scorer. I mean, and he showed it on the big stage in the NCAA tournament. He's a guy that would put the team on his back. And really, I would think he's going to be able to score wherever he goes. He's just a natural scorer, and he's a really good shooter too. You're hearing the thing about the workout in Boston where he made 85 out of 100 threes, which I don't know if those things are true, but that's outrageous if he did. I didn't know he was that good a shooter, but yeah, he's definitely going to go high. He intrigues people. He could go six to the Pelicans. That would make perfect sense. Who knows? Maybe the Celtics take him at three. You know, once you get past the two, it's really a guessing game. Between, you know, Jamal Murray. If you're going to take a shooter, do you take Murray or do you take Hield? It's kind of in the eyes of the beholder, don't you think?
I think Murray's got a little more upside, and I think he's more of a, you know, Hield. I think he's Murray's. Hield kind of is what he is, I think, at this point. I mean, he could get a little better, but Murray is kind of oozing with that upside where he could just not just be a shooter. You know, he could be just a pure scorer. I would take Murray, but I could understand Hield. So, you guys have any sleepers? So, give me a guy who you think is going to go too low that you would take a little bit higher looking at the mocks.
I think that's it. I think you hit it. I think Hield is kind of being pigeonholed as a scorer, and guys with more of an all-around game are going to shoot ahead of him. So I think he might even drop out of the top 10.
All right. So Buddy Hield.
How about a guy who's sunk in most mocks? They got him somewhere near 20, who to me is just a really good all-around guard who really, I think, could be a good NBA player, could be a guy on a good team that would really help a good team win, Denzel Valentine. I think he's slipping too far. I think he's going to be a very good player. He's got size for the guard position. He handles the ball. He can shoot. He takes it to the basket. He's really got the whole all-around game that you want from a guard, and he has NBA size. And for some reason, he's slipped way down there when, I mean, at the beginning of the year, he was being touted as college player of the year. I know he had an injury, but he came back and looked fine. So that's my sleeper, Denzel Valentine.
Yeah, and that's a good call, Senior. I mean, especially because they go to the same school, it's very, very easy to make the Draymond comparisons. You know, Draymond, same kind of deal, triple-double machine in college, somehow slipped to the second round, and, you know, everybody was an idiot is what it comes down to.
That's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and so for me, a guy I'd like, and I don't know that he's underrated so much as, I think he's kind of properly rated, but I think he's going to be a really good good upside, could be a real good pro, is Malachi Richardson from Syracuse. Obviously came on in the tournament, but with his size and with the dearth of talent at two guard in the NBA, I think he has a chance to really make a splash as a guy getting picked in the 20s. Any busts? I have one. I'll go first. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Scott Labissiere from Kentucky was touted coming into the year as a possible like number one overall pick. Didn't show much at Kentucky. He's still going to go in the top 10 to 12 based on upside, and I just didn't see it. Senior.
Yeah, I haven't thought about busts. It's so hard to call.
About Henry Ellenson, you like him?
I like Henry Ellenson. Okay, I'll go with a similar player, okay? I like Ellenson. A guy who's rated above Ellenson, who Ellenson could have been my sleeper. I think he's going to be really, really good. He can play in the low post. He can shoot from the outside. He's a little skinny, but I mean, he's a baby. He was just a freshman. He can really pass the ball out of the post. He has all the skills. A similar player who just isn't as good. He's older and just isn't as good, but is being rated higher is Sabonis. I don't think Sabonis is going to be a good pro at all. I think he's slow. I don't like his shot. I think he's a guy that was a very good college player that it's not going to translate into the world of the NBA athletes. I think he's going to be a nobody.
Not his father.
No, he doesn't have the beef that his father had, that's for sure. You know, his father was a real good all-around player, but his father was ripped. He was a big boy. He looks kind of like tall and scrawny, and I don't see him filling out much more. And maybe I've seen him in the wrong games, but every time I've seen him play, I don't see that guy being an NBA player. I just don't see it. I don't think he has the physical attributes.
All right, good stuff. John, you got anyone?
Yeah, well, I already gave it up. Like I said, the foreign guys I hit and miss, I think of Bender.
All right, Bender the bust. That is a distinct possibility. So, good stuff, man. John, I know
Wait, hold on a second. We didn't discuss who do you think the Knicks are going to take in the first round?
I'm sorry.
Well, boy, Bagnani. We traded him for Bagnani.
They're going to draft the same guy as the Nets. How's that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Thank you.
I love the New Jersey Nets.
So John, we'll leave a trade. Brooklyn Nets, yeah, Brooklyn.
John, yeah, that's right, Brooklyn. Danny Ainge raped them.
Oh, my God.
We'll be picking in the top five next year again in Boston. Thank you, Brooklyn.
So, Johnny, I know I said 20 minutes. We've gone about 30. That tends to happen here on the lounge. So,
I wasn't rushing. I just want to make sure that a senior gets his rest. You know, somebody's got to work for a living. It's not going to be me. So you guys got to get out there and, slave away for us.
This is true. So
work hard for my pension, please, man.
Thanks, John.
So, John, you'll be able to hit the ATM here and do what you got to do. Senior, as we've said, he's going to have a nightcap. Head out. He's going to work in a couple hours. And it's been, but before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out. My little buddy Ryder graduated from kindergarten today. I was able to attend.
Nice.
They did a fantastic version of Dynamite, the kids did. Posted on Facebook. You guys got to check it out. Great job, buddy. Your unk's real proud of you. All right.
Yeah, also received his yellow belt this week.
Received his yellow belt and... He had a loose tooth, which I pulled out, he asked me to pull it out, and I've never done anything like that, and we were able to do it without any severe injury. So, real big 24 hours. Real big 24 hours here.
You tied the string on the door or what?
No, man, I just used a tissue. It was very gentle.
Oh, yeah. No pliers. Oh, good, man.
Yeah, so, big stuff for Little Ryder. He's the number one elementary school aged fan of the Sports Lounge, probably our only one, but he does ask to hear it. He's going to be very happy that we're back. So I'll play this for him in the car. So listen, guys, we're going to make this an all the time thing. John, I want you on as much as possible. I'm going to drag you out of that champagne room, kicking and screaming to at least give us 15 minutes. All right.
I'll be honest. You got more than that.
And senior, senior's my, my compadre. Senior's my right-hand man here in the lounge, so he'll be on every week. Very excited to be back. Hopefully the nation's excited. We love you guys. For Senior, for Mr. D'Amato, for the Sports Lounge as a whole, for the ladies, for the cigars, for the drinks, I'm the Cowboy, and I'm out. Go Cavs!
Hey, Senior, happy Friday.
Sexy.
home.